Welcome into the Husker 24/7 podcast. I am Mike Schaefer, joined by Michael Bruntz here during the bye week. Bruntz is back after taking a victory lap because Austin Allen caught a touchdown pass. He actually did it in what? He did it in the Minnesota game. Mm-hmm. He did it against Michigan. Two in a row for Austin Allen. Michael Bruntz, do you want to comment? Do you want to start right there?
Well, I essentially George Costanza'd it, right? You got to end on a high note. And I don't know that it was going to get much higher than that. I mean, you show faith in Austin Allen that something eventually is going to break through for him. And then all of a sudden, you know, the dam gives way and the townspeople are running for high land. So that's what happened. And I felt like I didn't really, there's nothing I could have added last week to really top that.
Yeah, well, I mean, just quickly on Austin Allen, he's venturing into Tyler Hoppus 2017 territory.
He is.
Which is the last high for a tight end play around these parts. So, and then he really has a chance to go over 500 yards. I mean, if you think about it. So if he can average 40 yards over the next four games, he will put himself above 500 yards. Nebraska hasn't had a tight end do that in a little while. So Austin Allen could have a all Big Ten like season. His touchdown against Minnesota, while very nice, also served a purpose too in explaining that Nebraska can throw the ball in the red zone. They just choose not to more often than not. So we'll just we'll get right into the Nebraska Minnesota game. Bruntz, you watched that one from home. You avoided the house of horrors that right now is Huntington Bank Stadium for Nebraska. They've lost their last three there, and including two games that weren't particularly close, and this one had the makings of being another blowout until Nebraska righted the ship, but weren't able to complete the full comeback. What were your just sort of thoughts? I mean, even if you could going into the game, you didn't make a prediction. You weren't on the podcast. You didn't have a prediction dated anywhere, really. What were your thoughts kind of going in, and certainly what are your thoughts coming out?
Yeah, I mean, I was probably naive to assume that Nebraska could have put together another solid performance, you know, coming off of Michigan and the way that they beat Northwestern. I, you know, going into that game, thought that the defense was going to have to carry the day. I mean, I think Minnesota's defense was still a little bit untested, but, you know, it's kind of the typical Big Ten defense that, you know, would at least give you some issues. And the hesitation, I guess, for thinking that Nebraska would go in there and win was, you know, you look back at the way that PJ Fleck's team has game planned against Nebraska in the past, and I feel like they've always had really good game plans for Nebraska's defense. And, you know, I thought that we were kind of past the sleepwalking through the first couple quarters of an 11 a.m. game, but we weren't. And, you know, the defense played its worst half of football since the Illinois game at the worst possible time. The offense looked completely out of sorts, whether that's Adrian Martinez's injury, whether it's the way that they game planned around the injury, whether they just had no rhythm whatsoever, whether it was play calling, whatever. You know, it was you were kind of barreling in the carpool lane towards blowout city in that first half. And to Nebraska's credit, I mean, again, they should have won the game late with the way they played. You had the three trips inside the red zone that got you nothing. And, you know, the Jock Yant stumble at the one, I feel like we need to have like a cheeky name for that play. Which maybe by the end of the podcast, I'll come up with one, but it's, you know, that's Nebraska football. You're so close. And at the same time, you just cannot get out of your own way enough to win a game like this. And it was one that Nebraska needed. I mean, going into it, I think you were looking at Minnesota and Purdue as can't lose games, coming down the stretch, and Nebraska leaves with this tail tucked between its legs at the worst possible time going into a bye game or a bye week. So the one thing I was thinking, and I'm curious what you think, Mike, it seemed like what we were hearing from Nebraska in the week leading up to that Minnesota game seemed to raise the issue of the fact that it was the last game before a bye week and you just got to get through this and, and Nebraska was beat up and all this other stuff. What contribution do you think that the way that Nebraska talked about that game beforehand actually like played out in that game on that Saturday?
Well, all right. Run that through me one more time. Like, how did you phrase that? I want to make sure I get this right.
So I'm always of the opinion you get what you emphasize. And Nebraska, the coaches and some players had talked about, you know, we're kind of a tired group. They played 7 straight weeks, you know, just needed one more effort and then they'd get that bye week. How, to me, that mindset leads into the kind of performance that you saw in the first half from Nebraska. Am I wrong?
I don't know that you're wrong. I didn't think of it in the moment. I know Happer was my co-host for Happer and Shaver, Connor Happer, was pretty clued in on that right away after that initial Monday press conference. He came back and he's like, I feel like there's too many people talking about how the bye week is next. And I didn't think much of it, in part because I guess I gave too much credit for Nebraska's ability to mentally be able to handle a spot where they just go and perform in a game and they go and do what's expected of them. I guess when you asked that question initially, I was thinking like, if you just took the way Nebraska started that game, like let's just say you took the first half and then you were trying to figure out what they were emphasizing in practice and what their total focus was in that contest as to how they played against Minnesota. And it's like, you know that Minnesota came in with the game plan that they're like, we're going to take every one of these passes that they give us, every single one. I don't know what Nebraska's focus was going into the first half of that game. It obviously changed when you're down 21-9 and you have to play a different style in the second half. And it seemed like they got more clued in early in that game. It just kind of felt like they sort of were just going to meander their way into the game and figure it out as they went along. And guess what? It played exactly that way. And that's not the first time we've seen that. And I don't know if that's just a product of an offense that never seems to stay on the field at the beginning of a game when it's on the road. You saw that against Illinois. You saw that against Michigan State. You saw that against Minnesota. They did get a field goal against Oklahoma, but I just when you said what you did, it just locked me sort of into the idea. Like if you were just dropped into that game, and after the first half, you were told to write down what it is you thought Nebraska was trying to do on offense, it'd have been kind of hard because they're just so discombobulated. Like when it looks good, it looks effortless.
Mm-hmm.
When it looks bad, it looks like they have no idea what it is that they want to do to stress a defense. And so I know that's not the tangent that you were looking for when you asked the question.
No, but I mean, it
that's
is.
That's sort of where I arrived after what you were saying.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's, you know, I think teams throughout the course of a season have that kind of a clunker from time to time. But I mean, you know, you would kind of hope that in all the close talk and all this other stuff that Nebraska would be past that kind of a game. And especially in a game that was, you know, really important in terms of, you know, kind of what, you know, if Nebraska's going to make a bowl game or just trying to seize back momentum or whatever. Because I was just going back to, I think it was Austin Allen that said, you know, the coaching staff's going to take it easy on our bodies this week. And we've played for 7 straight weeks. We're kind of tired. You know, it looked in the first half like you had a team that was riding the brakes into a bye week and another team that had just come out of a bye week. Like, that's probably the best way I can put it.
Yeah. And I also think there's this, and this we haven't really gotten into yet either, but it feels to me that in the last 3 times that these teams have played each other, and Nebraska and PJ Fleck have met 5 times now, and Minnesota's won 4 out of those 5, with the exception being the 2018 game. But the last 3, it feels like one team shows up wanting to beat the crap out of the other, and the other team just shows up. And it doesn't matter the circumstance. It doesn't matter who's playing well going into that situation. It doesn't matter if you're coming off of a massive COVID pause. It doesn't matter if you're coming off of a bye week. It doesn't matter if your team is undefeated and you're working on a great season. No matter what, Minnesota has shown up 3 times in a row. And I don't know if it's the product of not showing up as well in 2018 and PJ Fleck still has that in his brain, or if it's because that staff up there sort of circles the Nebraska game before the year and they make that a big one. And I think that's really what it is, because it does feel like Minnesota cares about this game more than Nebraska does. It does feel like PJ Fleck had that line ready to go in the post game about this matchup between those two teams. I don't think that's just a occurs in the moment sort of deal. I think that he really believes that he has Nebraska's number and that his team is going to outplay Nebraska on a given Saturday. And for three straight years, they've shown up and done that, whether it's at home, whether it's on the road, no matter the circumstance. It's interesting to me that Nebraska does not feel the same way about Minnesota, despite the last two times. Like, one time you got embarrassed on their field. Last year, you sort of got embarrassed at home with how poor you played against a team that had been shut down and was with a few amount of players available to them. And this time, in a game in which, just like Illinois, a team that beat you on your home field last year, they really had no business doing it, you come out flat. Like, I don't, you know, I don't know what more motivation a player would have needed, but for Cam Taylor to Britt to talk about how they didn't bring their own juice to start the game on Saturday, that's alarming to me. The way that it started, like those first three plays, you just knew immediately this is the kind of game Nebraska's in. And I don't know how that gets fixed. And I don't know who ultimately that falls upon. But I do know that when Minnesota plays Nebraska and if PJ Fleck is a head coach, that game means a lot to him. And I just can't say the same for Nebraska when they play Minnesota.
Yeah. No, it's true. I mean, I think the whole culture versus skill comment, I mean, I feel like that's been blown out a little bit more than it should be. I mean, it's a great line, but I mean, I think Matt Schick had him on his Sirius XM show on Monday and was talking about, like, I guess he clarified that what he meant was more about, you know, one score games. And that's obviously been a topic of concern around Nebraska, given the way things have gone the last four seasons. But Minnesota's 3-1 this year, I believe, in one score games. And, you know, that they talk about, you know, how they emphasize winning those types of games and eliminating losing and those kinds of things. And I don't think he's wrong. I mean, I think when you've kind of hit on the right potion to kind of get up for those kinds of games and get those kinds of games over the finish line, I mean, I think, you know, he's right a little bit. I mean, it is a culture issue. And that word, I think, is probably a little bit triggering too around Nebraska, given how much it's been thrown around. But I think, you know, that to me looks like a team that's more geared towards winning those kinds of close games, I guess, than maybe what Nebraska is right now, where, you know, you get to the point where you need a play or, you know, you're close to scoring or something like that. And it, you can almost kind of see it in the back of players' minds where they almost expect the other shoe to drop. And that's a scary place to be as a player and certainly as a coach when you're trying to figure out how to get things over the hump.
Yeah, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. Okay. So we're discussing this game. We've discussed this game. Let's just kind of pull out halfway through the season. They're 3-5. Not where anyone expected them or, well, maybe where some people expected them to be, but not certainly where they wanted to be through their own words and their own actions. What is your level of concern about Nebraska as they come out of this bye week? They'll have, you know, we'll talk again next week. They get Purdue, then they have Ohio State, then they have Wisconsin and Iowa. Do you think this team, because it feels like it's wound pretty tight now at this point. Like, you've lost all the games you really could afford to lose. What kind of attitude, what do you sort of expect out of this team as you head into that Purdue week next week?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a huge question. You know, first off, you got to get healthy because you got so many of your guys that you're counting on that are beat up right now. I mean, sounds like Deonte Williams is going to be limited or out for a little while. Adrian Martinez is limited. Ramir Johnson going through concussion protocol. But, you know, you would hope that with a week off to kind of recharge the batteries, that guys would come back dialed in, ready to take on a Purdue team that I think is probably better than they get credit for. I mean, they just went on the road and beat Iowa handily. And I think in some ways that kind of a game probably gets guys focused a little bit more easily. If Purdue would have gone into Iowa City and gotten their doors blown off, like that to me would have signaled more of kind of an upset alert type thing, or, you know, about Nebraska might maybe sleepwalking through things, but they think Purdue was kind of a walkover and not be dialed in for it. I mean, I think what I've kind of learned through eight games is that assuming pretty much anything about this team and where it's at mentally is probably a losing proposition. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I think a lot of people wrote them off after the Illinois game, and they came back and they played pretty good football for about 6 weeks, and then they kind of crashed and burned here again in Minneapolis.
The thing though is I think it needs to come more from the players right now. Like that to me is going to tell just how dialed in guys still are, as if you have this core of guys that you really have liked all season who have, you know, been pretty kind of a team led type group. I mean, that's where you need to lean on Adrian Martinez and Austin Allen and Ben Stille and some of those guys to kind of get things refocused a little bit. But I don't know. I mean, the thing I wonder is with a weekend off, and actually I think you asked me this when I was on your show yesterday, do you think that there's anything out there that Nebraska can do, especially on offense, midstream to kind of right the ship or give a different look, or what are you anticipating seeing anything different against Purdue than what we saw through the first eight games of the season?
I don't think so. I mean, I think they kind of fired their big gun, which is changing up the offensive line. Obviously we can get into the conversation about reps at wide receiver and whatever else, but I think some of that is entirely out of your hands to a point. I mean, you got to have guys that can perform and know what's going on and everything else. And so if there's a trust concern there, it's going to be hard to get those players onto the field. But I just don't think there's a lot that they can change. I mean, I think that's sort of the scary part for me, is if you went 3-5 and it's not like there's a magical solution fix to this. I mean, you still got the same quarterback if he's healthy, and you still have the same running back if he's healthy, and your offensive line is still a little bit incomplete, and your tight ends are still kind of the best part of what you have on offense. I think defensively it's as much as just sort of getting back to square one. I think that if either side felt the brunt of playing eight straight weeks, it felt like the defense, which between the Michigan game and the Minnesota game started to show a little bit of wear and tear and some cracks. But I have a lot of confidence that they're going to come out and play pretty well over the final four games of the season. But the big thing to me is just going to be the offense. Can they do enough to win a game against a Purdue or a Wisconsin or an Iowa, let alone Ohio State? And so they're going to have to score at the very least three touchdowns a game, plus some field goals if they can make them. I mean, I just think it all comes back to the offense, and that's the side of the field that needs to get better and needs to play better. And that's been true for how many years now?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's more about who you try to push the ball to at this point. Like I don't know that the personnel looks different. Maybe we see Thomas Fedoni late. I wouldn't mind seeing that. But I think you probably at this point need to basically say, okay, who do we need to get more involved? Because getting Austin Allen more involved has looked pretty good, and I'm surprised that it took this long for that to take place. I think you need to find ways to get Samori Toure the ball. Like, you got to take deeper shots.
Well, that's part of the confounding thing, is that you took shots against Northwestern, you took shots against these other teams, and then against Minnesota, you had one deep pass to Levi Falk, and that was about it. And I guess if you want to call the seam route to Austin Allen a shot, but that's a 20-yard pass.
Like, right.
There's a difference there.
Yeah.
One deep ball the entire game.
Yeah. It's that, when they've done it, has looked really good, I think. And they just have not done it with any kind of consistency. And I think, too, that kind of plays into the whole attacking attitude. I mean, Northwestern is not going to be confused for the 85 Bears, but they took some shots. They played with aggression on offense. They pushed pushed the envelope with trying to get Northwestern on their heels, and it worked. I mean, I it should have worked against Minnesota. I think it can work against Purdue. But, you know, I just – against teams like Ohio State and Wisconsin and Iowa, you're not going to win football games by just going horizontal the whole time. I mean, you've got to try to get the ball to your playmakers downfield. I hope to see that when they come back.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. We're going to get into a little bit of recruiting. Scott Frost spoke as much about Nebraska's plans during the bye week here as well. And then, of course, there's a decommitment this weekend too. And we will dive into that when we return here on the Husker 24/7 podcast.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, we are back, Brunts. I was actually gone when Hayden Schwartz committed to Nebraska the first time. He is now decommitted. There seems to be somewhat of a general feeling that this was a move that served all parties. You know, we'll leave it at that. I do know, and you do know, because people on our network at 24/7 Sports had reached out about it. Hayden Schwartz, since early September, had been in contact with a few different programs. So it didn't strike me at the time as all that surprising. And then if Nebraska felt like there was concerns of his actual commitment sticking, it was maybe better for both sides to just open things back up. So that is where we're at right now. Incidentally, I believe Hayden Schwartz was in Minnesota the past weekend. So he was up visiting the Gophers, watching Nebraska play there. And that might be that might have been enough to kind of determine the rest of the route, if you will.
Yeah, he visited Nebraska a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, the Michigan game.
And, I mean, he wasn't that much bigger than Jake Applegate, which surprised me a little bit. But yeah, I mean, I don't think there was a ton of hand wringing there, I guess. We can talk about it now. I mean, what is Nebraska's coaches are on the road right now. What does this week look like in terms of who they're trying to check in on? Cause it feels like it's going to be JUCO heavy, right? JUCO and.
Yeah, I think you got some different coaches at the Jayhawk conference this week. I think that you're going to get some local check-ins. I mean, maybe they see some high school games of some 23s and some 24s. But it doesn't feel like there's an all-out blitz for one or two different players in the 2022 class. I think sort of what makes it frustrating for fans to hear this is I don't know that Nebraska has like a must get that's out there. I think they're just kind of scanning the field of what's available, trying to find guys that they think can help without loading up their class too much. And it's going to be the same way in the transfer portal. And I understand that there's nothing remotely invigorating or sexy about that comment, but it is not like there isn't a guy in the 2022 class. Like, it's not Jaleel Martin. It's not Zaquan Frazier. It's not, you know, they like these guys, but there isn't one person where they're like, we gotta go guns blazing on this. And I think that's in part because this cycle, as disrupted as it has been, I think they're just trying to fill what they can, grab the best players they can, and then really hammer things hard on 23. I think you're more likely to see them
out and about Friday night at high school games that involve players they really like from the 2023 class.
Because it's, I mean, the with the way that the classes are currently split up, I mean, you can make a pretty strong argument that the last thing Nebraska needs right now at a number of positions are more high school kids.
Right. That's what I don't know that people understand, is that the roster is so imbalanced towards freshmen, and they're going to have so many guys from the 21 class and the 20 class who are both considered just freshmen this year that could redshirt, that imbalance would then be even bigger if you went and signed 20 kids from high school in the 2022 class.
Logan Smothers, is he still a freshman?
What is that?
Logan Smothers, he's like a fifth-year freshman.
Yeah, he'll be a sophomore next year, so he doesn't necessarily count towards this.
Yeah.
But there's other guys that do. And it's just a potential mess if you have – because the only number that matters is 85, right? So if you have 47 kids on your roster that are freshmen, it really severely limits your ability to go and get other players if three other classes make up the other 38 players. And so part of why you're going into the transfer portal is, yes, to go get immediate help, which is what Scott Frost talked about, and I'll read one of those quotes here in a second. But the other reason is to spread out the class. Like, you gotta backfill in some areas where you've had some people transfer out. You gotta have some players fill out some spots, so that way in the 2024 class, you're not taking a six-person class plus whatever attrition you have, because the numbers are so screwy. Because instead of adding to the 85, they just said you could have up past 25. You could go, you know, or you can backfill against guys that initially you wouldn't have been able to count because they transferred at a certain time. But it doesn't change the fact that the only number that matters is 85. And that's all the number that matters. And so that's what Nebraska has to work off of. And I think that is more difficult for people to possibly assess than they realize, because for some it's like, well, they should just load up, get as many guys as you can. And that, I think, would be the worst thing for Nebraska.
Yeah.
If honestly, you know, in addition to the 85, something that seems like it could help this program is if they actually pared down a little bit. They don't need 140 players at practice. They clearly are struggling to run things when they have that many as it is anyways. Focus on what matters. I know this is not going to be received particularly well, but you don't have to take a 20-person walk-on class every year. So there's different things that they can do in that regard. But here's what Scott Frost had to say yesterday about the recruiting class. This recruiting class, we're going to focus on maybe some immediate impact guys a little more, probably not sign as many freshmen. When you're as close as we've been, one or two pieces, one or two more guys will get you over the hump. So we're probably going to look at the transfer portal a little more, look to the junior college a little more, and focus on these things to make sure we replace a couple guys we might be losing, and try to add just a couple pieces I think we need. So again, it gets into the mindset of Nebraska feels like they're close. They feel like they're a few pieces away. And they're going to have some, you know, they're going to have some really tough things to replace. JoJo Doman's going to be gone. That's not an easy piece to just replace on your defense right now. Austin Allen's going to be gone. He might be your most consistent, best offensive player by the end of the year. You on defense, you could end up losing Damian Daniels, who has been a really revelation for you at nose tackle. Brunts, who's their backup nose tackle right now?
Well, on paper, Jordan Riley, but I don't know that's actually the case.
Yeah. I mean, they don't have anyone ready to go in that spot. So part of why the 3-5 stings as bad as it does is that it's hard for me to envision a roster next year that's better than the one that Nebraska has this year. And so if you're not able to take care of business on the road against Illinois and Minnesota, and you can't win one of those games when you're close against Oklahoma, Michigan, and Michigan State, with a roster that he himself, Scott Frost himself, has said is the best that he's had here, it's hard to figure out how you're just a piece or two away when you're losing some of your most important players. And in addition, we don't know what's going to happen with Adrian. And Adrian is sort of the son that every football conversation in Nebraska has to circle, because it is hard to envision finding a guy that's as talented. But it may not be the worst thing for Nebraska that they aren't as quarterback centric in their offense. However, by nature, the quarterback is everything in this offense. And that's what makes them unique in the Big Ten, because there's not a whole lot of places that that's true about.
Yeah. I mean, that's that the decisions of there was what 12 guys, I think, that basically have a choice to make are going to be fascinating, because I mean, if potentially Adrian moves on, or, you know, Danny Daniels moves on. I mean, that there's, those are two huge pieces that you have to fix. I mean, on defense, probably the most important guy in that in a 3-4 is your nose tackle. And in this offense, it's the quarterback, like you said. And I mean, that's, I mean, one advantage of the portal is you can go in and find somebody, but you know, that's a, those are two tough places to kind of have to reset the deck in, you know, going to potentially year five, or, you know, if you have assistant coaching changes or whatever. So those to me, those decisions plus, you know, what you do in the portal, I think are probably more interesting than what Nebraska's doing with high school kids right now, if anything. Like it, yep. It just, it doesn't, I mean, maybe, you know, Vince Genitone, you get a late offer to him, but I don't know that there's a ton of guys out there in high school right now that are really even, you know, on the front burner for Nebraska right now.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I agree with that entirely. Anything else you want to throw in about recruiting as we are here right now?
I don't think so. I mean,
do you have any thoughts on Gage Stenger?
You've seen him, right? I have not seen him play in person.
Yeah, Gage is he was the best high school player on the field when I went and watched Millard-South and Bellevue West. A really interesting athlete that looks like he's going to start out at safety. We'll see kind of how he grows. One of the things I like about this class, and I understand that some people wouldn't, but I do, is I think Nebraska has really defined what they want to recruit on defense, and they've done a nice job of finding some of that locally. And it's going to take a little bit to pay off, but guys like Ernest Hausman and Jake Applegate and Gage Stenger, and you can talk to Alan True about this. You know, you as a user, as a listener, certainly can. Alan's very available, or I could talk to Alan, or Brunch can too.
Here's his number. Call him.
Alan is Alan is very high on what he has detailed Nebraska, basically looking for guys that are very good high school athletes that have the ability to play different positions. He loves that they've locked in on some of these guys, Ernest Hausman, Jake Applegate, Gage Stenger, who might be better offensive players in high school than they are defensive players. But by nature of what they're being asked to do on offense, they show certain skill sets that should allow them to translate over on defense, where you can put the weight on them. You know, you can teach them some of the techniques, but you can't make a guy more athletic. You can't make a guy better at catching the ball, you know, or being in the right spot or understanding an offense. And so if you're taking a quarterback and a couple wide receivers and guys that know their high school offenses pretty well and have had to learn those things, and you throw them on the defensive side of the ball, their instincts are going to be pretty good because they're going to think like an offensive player on defense. And Nebraska's doing a lot of that. And you can sort of see that they have a bit of a type where they like these 6'3", 6'2½" to 6'4". And they could be an inside linebacker, they could be an outside linebacker, they could be a safety. And they just want to get that athleticism on the field because they think that they can get it big enough and they think they can get it strong enough that they're going to be able to hold up against the point of attack. And so far, if you look at what they've done with some of the guys that are out there right now for them, you have a Luke Reimer. Luke's very fast. They basically took a guy that was going to play safety, I think, at FCS, moved him into the box as an inside linebacker at Nebraska, and he's had a very nice career with it. And they're pairing him up with a Nick Henrich, who's your more traditional north-south linebacker. And so that's the kind of concepts they're trying to do. And I think some of the defensive players they have in this class fit that really well. And I would highlight that as something that even in a year in which they're more than likely not going to finish better than in the 60s in their recruiting ranking, they're still getting guys that fit what they want to do. They're not just taking players for the sake of taking them.
Sounds good. So, right. So what we learned today is you can call Alan True if you want, and also you hate walk-ons. Is that the other takeaway from today?
I feel like I'm getting BC'd here with tight ends, but I do not hate walk-ons. I just think that Nebraska doesn't need 140 people on their roster.
Yeah, no, I agree.
They struggle to manage what they have now. They could pare it down a little bit.
Yeah, that's fair. And it's, I mean, until that new facility is open too, like, it's an absolute headache over there with guys walking through random interviews and towels and everything else. But anywho, I digress.
Yeah, well, that can be a conversation we can, I'm sure, have at another time. All right, any closing thoughts, Brunts? Anything you want to send us out with? Any knowledge you want to impart before you leave the pantry that you're doing this interview in?
Yeah, literally in a pantry. I was just sitting here eyeing the turmeric, seeing if I could make a little turmeric shot here.
It sounds not great.
Yeah, no, I don't want to do that. That would be awful. I don't really have much. Next week's busy, so that's good. We've got basketball starting up, football's back, and I'm eager to see what this Nebraska basketball team is going to look like, and also the return of Didosh Chan to, I guess he was never at Pinnacle Bank Arena, but he's coming back to Lincoln to play Nebraska for Purdue State. So we'll hit on all that next week, though.
I like that in his graphic of being committed to Purdue State, it's still the picture of him at Nebraska.
I think there's probably a recorder that I have somewhere that has a Didosh Chan interview on it that I never got to write because he left before. He left too quickly. He was just a flash in the sky.
Sometimes that's all they ever are.
Yeah.
All right. We're out. We'll be back next week with another podcast. There's no hype cast this week for the bye weekend. You're going to have to bring your own hype to Saturday. If you would like, you can contact me, and I'm more than willing to make an audio clip that says, "Let's get hype," that you can play when you wake up on Saturday, if that's what you need. But enjoy your bye week. Enjoy your bye weekend. Husker 24/7 will have coverage throughout the weekend. There will be plenty of stuff. And we will be back next week with another Husker 24/7 podcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.